Welcome to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats, the show for fishermen by fishermen. Today's show is brought to you by Enigma Fishing, Cast, Catch, Repeat. Visit Anderson, South Carolina, home of beautiful Lake Hartwell. Phoenix Boats, experience the difference. And by the Bass Anglers Sportsman Society. Now here's lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we feature the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the BassPro.com Open Series and the up-and-comers on the Carhartt Bassmaster College Series presented by Bass Pro Shops and the tens of thousands of Bass Nation anglers around the country competing on the local level, all with a chance to advance to the big leagues of professional fishing. The Bass Nation operates youth, high school, and college programs, including a Junior Bassmaster Championship, a High School National Championship, the College National Championship, and the College Bracket, leading to the Bassmaster Classic. The Bass Nation is at the grassroots of who we are, and for more information on how to become a member or to start a Bass Nation Club, visit Bassmaster.com and click on the Nation tab. The best way to communicate with the show, to post your pictures or tell us your stories or just comment on the show, is to visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/BASS or on Twitter at Bassmaster and use the hashtag Bass Radio. You can also listen to all the shows at Bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the watch button at Bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. And now we've added a new element to Bassmaster Radio, and that's our video feed that you can find at Bassmaster.com/radio or go to Bassmaster.com and click on the watch tab and then click on Bassmaster Radio. We encourage you as well to like and subscribe to our YouTube page at Largemouth Marketing. That's YouTube Largemouth Marketing. That's the production outfit for Bassmaster Radio. Remember what those bass looked like just a couple of weeks ago on the Sabine River? Well, the other end of the spectrum is in play this week at Lake Fork, a few hundred miles to the north in Texas, where it is the land of the giants. 36 20-pound bags on day one alone, and one 30-pounder, the 32-pound bag, Patrick Walters weighed and released. The same Patrick Walters that lapped the field at Fork in November. We'll have the winner and a complete report from the tournament next week. In the meantime, Jacob Fouts is leading the Open's AOY field early on, and the Paperboy will join us today. Plus, Texas Open's angler Todd Castledine on the art of fishing the bed. But first, we get a Kentucky Lake update from TVA River and Reservoir Compliance Manager Dennis Baxter. And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And we're going to get things started today, as I said in the open. Kentucky Lake. Kentucky Lake is a very important lake for all fishermen, whether you're a professional fisherman, recreational fisherman. It doesn't matter. It's one of the truly great lakes throughout the Mid-South and really in the country, Tennessee River Reservoir. And there's been an issue. Obviously, we've been dealing with the Asian carp issue. We've been dealing with it traveling up and down the Tennessee River. And who better to talk to than Dennis Baxter? He is the TVA River and Reservoir Compliance Manager. They're doing some shocking. They're doing some testing, some really cool stuff as they combat not only those issues, but just talk about the general overall health of the river system. And Dennis joins us now. Mr. Baxter, welcome to the show. How are you?
Tom, I'm very good, and thank you very much for having me on the show. Lots to share, and Kentucky Lake is a great reservoir.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It is a tremendous reservoir. Talk a little bit about the electrofish program that is going on. I know that you guys will be doing some of this next week, but just talk a little bit about the importance of it and how, you know, that what kind of a role that plays in determining the overall health of the fishery.
Yes, we have a program we call a spring program, and in the program we actually electrofish sections of the reservoirs, and we're looking at sport fish in the spring, bass and crappie. And so we're looking at the size structure, and any abnormalities they may have, it's just to give us an indication how well they're growing, and we can compare it to historical data to see, number one, did we have good spawns in years past? How did flooding and whatnot affect the successful spawning of the sport fish, etc.? So we conduct these surveys just to give us a great indication of how well the fishery is doing and if there's any missing year classes, if you will, those bad years where floods and whatever affected the spawn. So we use this information in conjunction with some models that we have to see if there's any effect of invasive species on the sportfish population. So this is a key component to other programs we have going on in the region.
You know, one of the things I think that confuses some outdoorsmen out there is that what happens with the fish when they're electroshocked and brought up like that? How long is the recovery period? Do they enter right back in, no mortality rate, they enter right back into the ecosystem? Just explain that, because I think some people are confused as to, you know, what happens when these fish are quote-unquote shocked up.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and a lot of the boat ramps, we explain it a lot. So we're actually emitting a low amperage electric field from our boat, and it's a direct current. So we're using DC current, which extends about 12 feet by 12 feet. So you just imagine a sphere of electrical current. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only area that we're actually electrofishing. You know, it doesn't go out, you know, hundreds of yards. It's just right there by the boat. So what this electric field does, it temporarily stuns the fish. So it bombards their nervous system, if you will, and just makes them tense up.
Dennis Baxter with us, compliance manager for the TVA River and Reservoir System. One of the issues, I mean, there's obviously two issues, and we'll get to the carp in a moment, but another question that folks have is the grass. The grass seems to come and go. I fished a tournament last weekend on Gunnersville, and there's a ton of grass down there. Wheeler has very little grass anymore, it seems like, and grass used to be something really prevalent at Kentucky Lake, but not as much anymore. Explain a little bit about that, and you know, and how important that is to the health of the ecosystem as well.
Right, habitat. So grass is part of habitat. So you've got, you know, rock, you've got woody debris, you've got vegetation, great habitat. So all fish need some sort of habitat to be successful. So the grass, or aquatic macrophytes, we call them. Their existence is dependent on river flow and weather. So if you're in a drought situation, the water slows down, these aquatic weeds have a way to root themselves, and they start growing. So in drought situations, you'll see a lot of macrophytes or a lot of weeds growing, and black bass love weeds. I mean, that's great habitat for these sport fish. So that's a good thing. Gunnersville's blessed with aquatic weeds, blessed with it. Now, eelgrass is coming, and it's raising its ugly head, and it's becoming a problem with intakes and et cetera, but it's great habitat for these bass. Wheeler, now, the last year, we've been having an aquatic weed problem on Wheeler, so there's a lot growing there now. But now, having to go all the way to the end of the system to Kentucky Reservoir, you know, Kentucky Lake, it doesn't have as much grass as these other southern lakes do. It's mainly because of weather and flow.
Yeah.
We have a lot of flow going through Kentucky Lake. So it's, you know, it those plants to establish themselves.
I see. All right. And now the Asian carp issue, silver carp, if you will, which I understand is a delicacy. I haven't tried it yet. It just doesn't compute for me in my mind when I hear carp. It's not the fish I want to eat necessarily, but I understand that this is a pretty tasty fish. Talk about, though, how it's being eradicated, the commercial fishing that's going on for it, and whether or not, you know, we think we're starting to get it under control, because it got really scary there for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Any invasive species coming in the system is scary because there's a lot of potential for harm, if you will. Now, having said that, I've tried Asian carp, especially silver carp, several times now. It's very delicious. First time I tried it was at a TWRA event in Paris, Tennessee. They had a public meeting about 5-6 years ago. They served Asian carp. We just had catfish. And this was in Paris, Tennessee, the catfish capital of the world, if you will. And we tried that, and it was actually better than the catfish we had. So having said that, what we're trying to do, we're a part of a coalition, the state-led coalition. So we have Kentucky and Tennessee, Mississippi and Alabama, and all working together, trying to, number one, understand the silver carp problem, and number two, what can we do to, number one, stop the upstream migration, and number three, how can we get them out of our system? So what we found is commercial fishermen is one of the most effective ways of getting these carp out. They're very ingenuity, or they're very smart of getting these fish out, and the states actually are subsidizing some of the so many cents per pound, so it gives them incentive to catch more fish. So commercial harvesting is very good. The USGS did some experimentation on massive netting of in Kentucky Lake on coves. It was very successful, but a lot of labor intensive. And we're finding out that, man, these commercial fishermen can pull a lot of fish out and for a lot less money than it costs to do these modified giant methods of getting these carp out. But these are just tools in our toolbox. There's a lot of tools in the toolbox. Barriers below the dams, we're experimenting on those, trying to get them, stop them from coming up from the Ohio River. Very important. So in TVA, we're also writing a programmatic environmental assessment on potentially putting in barriers in the Tennessee system to protect the TVA reservoirs. So we're all in this together. We're all working together, and these are the tools in our toolbox to help fight these Asian carp problems.
Well, it's all tremendous stuff. Dennis Baxter has been our guest from the TVA River and Reservoir Compliance Office, and you guys keep doing the great work. I mean, it's a very, very important fishery to everybody in the region, and we look forward to it continuing to be such, and to the work that you guys do.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Dennis Baxter there. That's good stuff. And it is an important fishery. There's no doubt about it. And it's a great fishery. And there are, you know, thoughts and concerns as well all the way down through, you know, all the way down through Pickwick and Wilson and over to Wheeler, Gunnersville, all the way in the entire system. People have said that they've seen the carp, you know, not necessarily in the same numbers. Some at Chickamauga have seen that they've seen more there. But, you know, I have great, great faith in these guys and that they're going to be able to get all of this under control. All right, we're going to get a break in here. When we return, we'll come back with more. This is Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And now a chance to talk to, well, he's an up-and-comer. We had him on a show a couple of years ago because he was a national champion back in 2017 out of Bryan College. He and his partner, they went up at Lake Bemidji, and he qualified for the Classic that was fished at Hartwell back then as well. And he was glossed the paper boy, that's right, by Dave Mercer, because he looks so young, and he still looks so young, and he's probably always going to look so young. But he's off to a great start in the Southern Opens. He finished fourth down at Leesburg at the Harris Chain, finished 11th at Douglas Lake, and leads the Angler of the Year standings now on the AOY side. He is still the paper boy. He's young Jacob Fouts, and he joins us now. Jacob, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you? Appreciate you guys having me on.
You don't mind being called the paper boy, do you? I mean, you look like the guy that's delivering my paper still.
Absolutely. I might not look quite as young as I did back then, but I'm still young.
I hear that. Now, you're also guiding on Lake Chickamauga as well. Your college, Bryan College, is right there on Chick. And, you know, that's something that it's got to be great for honing your skills. It's a totally different animal. Which is more pressure, taking clients out on the lake and putting them on fish, or, you know, fishing in a tournament for yourself?
To be honest, I'd say guiding's a lot more. I put a lot more pressure on myself guiding than I do in a tournament because, you know, I want my clients to have a good experience, and it's always good for me when they have a good day. It's a good way for me to get a good review and good word of mouth going. So I'd definitely say guiding is a lot more pressure for me.
Yeah, and you know, you're there, as I said, on Chick, part of the Tennessee River Chain, the great Tennessee River Chain. We just had Dennis Baxter on from the TVA talking about the program that they're doing up at Kentucky Lake. You've had a lot of experience there as well, you know, trying to get the silver carp are eradicated there, and they're doing a great job, I think, getting that under control. But just talk about the whole Tennessee River chain for you, because, you know, obviously at Chick, it's been phenomenal. But, you know, Watts Bar is great as well. People don't like to talk about it. Nickajack is a dirty little secret. Nobody wants to talk about that because, you know, they don't want too much pressure there. But, you know, the whole chain is really good. But are you seeing much carp down your way?
I haven't seen any personally myself. I think we've had one confirmed sighting so far, and that was, I guess, in February of last year. But I haven't seen any. The whole Tennessee River, it's still in great shape. You know, it's we're incredibly fortunate to live here in the area we do. It's got, you know, I'd say some of the best fishing in the whole world. At Chickamauga especially, it's definitely a premier bass fishery in the world. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Now, when you take your clients out, though, I mean, you got your spots. You got to put them on fish. They're paying good money to fish with you. Do you hold back some of the tournament spots? How does that work? Because I always wonder. You know, you got Lee Livesey is a guide on Fork where they're fishing this week in the elite event. You know, but you always wonder about that. You know, how you balance your guiding spots versus your tournament spots.
Yeah, I do. I have what I call guide holes, and then I have what I call tournament holes. And I don't take clients to tournament holes very often. About the only time I do that is if we're having a really tough day and I need them to catch a few. But Chickamauga is such a good fishery. It's you can pretty much just go down the bank and catch them. So it's not a big deal most of the time putting people on fish.
Now, people can book you for electronic trips as well, right? Talk about that a little bit because, you know, the electronics world, it's moving so fast, and now we got all the forward-looking live sonar, and, you know, there's even some controversy about that. I've read a couple of articles, some people thinking that maybe it should be banned in tournaments and so on, and, you know, I've fished a couple of tournaments out at the Hartwell, and I've seen, you know, when guys are chasing those fish that are following, you know, schooling, herring, and so on. It, if you're adept at it, I mean, it's almost like it's almost. I know it was Justin Hammer told me. He says, I almost feel like I'm cheating, you know, because I can see him right there, and I'm casting to him, and I can pull him right out of the school. But just talk about that in terms of taking people out and just educating them on their electronics. I'm barely up to speed on my down imaging, much less any forward imaging yet.
So like you said, I offer electronics trips, and what that entails is I can take them in either my boat or their boat. Most of the time it's in their boat. I'll take them out and show them how I set my stuff up, and show them what they're looking at, and help them interpret what they're looking at. You know, technology's come such a long way in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, even 10 years, even. You know, it's one of those deals now. It seems like fishing at the level I do at the opens, if you don't have that stuff and you're not good with it, you're at a disadvantage. And I've spent enough time with it where I feel like I can take other people out and help them interpret what they're looking at and understand how to use that stuff so that they can become better fishermen, and so that maybe they can pass some of the info down that I taught them to someone else. So to help people catch more fish, like you were saying with that front facing sonar, it really is like cheating, you know, like at the Harris chain down there in Florida. If I didn't have it, I don't finish fourth because I was seeing the fish I was catching.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's interesting. So if you're in an area that's a deeper water area and you find some real likely spots, you know, some boulders or even some brush piles or so on, do you have to see fish on it before you'll fish it? I mean, or will it be like, no, you know, there's that's a great looking brush pile, but I don't see any fish on it, so I'm not going to fish it. Or will you look for an area that it seems like it should hold fish and you go ahead and fish it anyway?
Here, for example, on Lake Chickamauga, if I don't see them in the brush pile or around the brush pile, I don't even make a cast. But like when you get into places like Florida where there's a lot of grass and stuff like that, and it's a little shallower, they can be a little bit more difficult to see. So you have to spend a little bit more time fishing in situations like that. But here on Chickamauga in the Tennessee River, if I'm not seeing them on my electronics, I'm really not fishing for them.
Yeah. Jacob Fouts with us leading the AOI standing. So here's the deal, so people understand who will qualify for the elites. There are three divisions. There's the Eastern Division, there's the Southern Division, the Central Division, and the Northern Division. They did away with the Eastern Division now and split that back up between the Northerns and the Southerns, which a lot of people really like. The top three in the standings and the points of each division will get an invite to the elites, and then the top three in the overall standings will get an invite to the elites as well. So you have fished these two Southern events, and I mean, you got to have a big lead. You're fourth place at Leedburg and 11th place at Dandridge. You got to be feeling pretty good about that. You won't know the result of that though all the way until Lake Norman in September. But you got to feel pretty good that the position that you're in there, that you can get that, that you're going to be able to get that invite.
Absolutely. I put myself in as good a position as I can. You know, there's still some work to be done, but you know, we put ourselves in a good spot. So I mean, it's just going to be a long way to Norman. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I would think that it would be. Talk to me about the Dandridge finish, 11th there, 27 pounds, 13 ounces, just missing championship Saturday. But talk about how you found them there.
I had a pretty bad practice. That's kind of been my common theme this year. I've had bad practices in both opens this year. So I had found a couple smallmouth holes on the first day of practice, and I hadn't fished them since the first day of practice, because I went looking for largemouth because I didn't think I could do well fishing for smallmouth. And I did find a couple deep schools, offshore at Douglas that I thought I could do well off of. But unfortunately, the first day of the tournament, I went to them schools and they were gone. I'm still not sure what happened to them. I think the shad started spawning. I think the shad spawn might have hurt me. So I kind of scrambled that first day and didn't really have much at 1 o'clock. I think I had a small limit for like 9 pounds, and I bailed on everything. I said, I'm gonna go back fish for these smallmouth and just see if they're biting. And I caught I think three good keeper smallmouth and ended up with like 13.7, I think, the first day.
Mm.
So that kind of gave me a little something to roll with on day two, and then I went out on day two and targeted smallmouth solely, and I caught a limit of smallmouth that weighed 12 pounds, and I told myself I probably need a big largemouth if I want to make a run at making the top 12 or top 10, and I went up shallow and just started throwing a swim bait around, and I got fortunate enough and caught a 4.5 smallmouth, but unfortunately I didn't quite sneak into the top 10, tied for the last spot and lost a tiebreaker, but you know, I'm plenty happy with an 11th place finish after the practice I had.
Yeah, well, no, that's a tremendous finish, and that's a great adjustment by you to get that done. And now you'll be at Pickwick coming up next week. I'll be there as well, fishing at Central Open. The first Central Open was postponed due to high water down at Smith Lake, so this will be the opener. What are your thoughts about Pickwick? What kind of experience do you have there?
I've got no experience at Pickwick, actually. I've never been there before. I mean, we're hitting it at what I think should be a pretty good time of year. They should be fishing all three stages of the spawn. I'm sure the shad spawn is going on. So I assume it'll be a pretty good tournament. We'll see some pretty good weights. Fish should be biting, but we'll see when we get down there.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now a guy, we have never had this guy on before, but he is a flat-out stud, especially when it comes to fishing Texas. Really, when it comes to fishing anywhere. He's had a great career with FLW, made almost $500,000 over there. He is fishing the Opens with Bassmaster, looking to get to the elites. You have seen him on the Pro Team Journal show, which he's done a tremendous job on. I think he's been on with Zona a few times as well. Todd Kasseldine joins us now. Todd, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
Oh, pretty good. I appreciate it.
You have been on with Zona's show, right? I know you've been down there fishing with him a few times.
Yeah. He came down to Rayburn, I think it was 2 years ago now. And we did a show. We were supposed to do one last year, but last year everything kind of got messed up. So I'm hoping we might win this year.
That Pro Team Journal show that you did, first of all, that show is they do such a great job with that show in terms of production. I mean, it's just a really, really good show. And I saw the one that you did with Hackney, and that looked like a fun day.
Yeah, I've done a couple with Hackney, and it doesn't matter if we catch them or not. Any time with Hackney is pretty fun. But yeah, that we had a pretty good time out there throwing that hybrid hunter around, catching some big ones. It's been fun kind of showcasing that bait around.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I've heard nothing but good things about that bait. And I know Mark did some of that down there as well, down at Choke Canyon, and lit them up pretty good. And it's a different kind of bait, this Strike King Hybrid Hunter. It's got that little double lip thing to it. What's the uniqueness of that? It just keeps it shallow. What do you think the deal is with that?
Yeah, so this thing's kind of different. It looks like a crankbait. I don't try to categorize it as a crankbait. It kind of acts like a little bit of a crankbait, a jerk bait, like a red eye shad, like a rattling bait. It's really loud. It goes through grass like no other bait. It's probably the most buoyant of crankbaits you'll ever find. So it's pretty much the most buoyant and the loudest crankbait you'll ever find, and it doesn't dive. And I know that makes kind of, you know, most crankbaits, they dive down with an angle. This thing just kind of goes down. You know what I'm saying? It still has that horizontal angle to it. So it's just really, really unique.
Yeah, and it's would you classify it as just a springtime type of deal, or is that something that you think will have application all year round?
Oh, no. I've been throwing this for a lot of years now. It catches them. Basically, if they're in 5 foot of water or less, 6 foot of water or less, you can catch them on it. It does not matter what time of the year it is.
Does it come in just one size? Because I always see it in one, basically one size, right?
No. There's a hybrid hunter and a hybrid hunter junior. There's one about, I don't know, it's about 30% the size of that one. So I'm sure you've seen the bigger one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the one that I had seen. Well, speaking of big ones, man, they've been catching them up on Lake Fork. I mean, I would imagine that this is no surprise to you, to any of the guys that are Texas guys. But it has been just absolutely amazing. Are you surprised at how many fish are being caught offshore versus being caught looking at them? I mean, there's a lot of spawning fish that are being caught, but it seems to be maybe even the bigger bags now coming offshore.
Yes and no. So this is really strange. This year has been – I'm actually on Rayburn right now, and the water's 64 degrees. I've never seen the water this cold this far into April. I mean, normally they're almost wrapping it up, and it's kind of a weird deal. Like, I think some spawn, but there's so many of them, these weird little fronts we've had in the cold snap we had in February. It's really got some stuff messed up. On our lakes, it's not very good. But what happened on the I was just at Grand Lake. We were at Texoma a couple weeks ago. Those lakes were just getting going, so it's actually making the ones further north like a lot better. So Fork, I think, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with sight fish. I predict the sight fishing will win over there.
Really? Okay, because you know, Lee Livesey, he thinks that they would go the other way, that it wouldn't be that it would be one off the bank, and you know, it will be interesting. I mean, there are a lot of guys that are looking at him. I think I said day one that I thought there'd be 8 century belts given out. I mean, 8, and man, I'll tell you what, there's probably gonna, you know, there's probably looking at 40 or 50 20-pound bags, you know, day one as well out there. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible, and it really is a testimony to what they've done with Texas Parks and Wildlife in terms of how they manage that lake.
Yeah, I get a lot of that from guys not from Texas. They just wish guys, you know, that this program could kind of filter out across the U.S. But yeah, our lakes are really done well by Texas Parks and Wildlife, and they stock them very well. They really go after big ones, and I think it's why we have so many big ones down here.
Yeah. Now, from a pro fishing standpoint, the interesting thing, the dichotomy is that we're seeing these toads being caught. I mean, it's absolutely stunning footage that we see there. But you don't bring a sack to a weigh-in, you're not going to have those big crowds. And, you know, we saw a couple of weeks ago down south of you there at the Sabine, you know, 10 pounds a day, you win the tournament. It was crazy. And yet 40,000 people showed up to see a bunch of little fish be weighed. I mean, they have such great fishing fans down there in Orange, Texas. We got an affiliate down there as well. And they're just great fishing folks. And, I mean, they'll come out and watch a guy weigh in 7 pounds. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, so there's that part of it from a live weigh-in type standpoint.
Right, and it's kind of weird. I mean, certain places across Texas will draw huge, huge crowds. Conroe's one of them. Ray Roberts will be one of them. But, you know, if you put them on Rayburn, it's weird. Like, you would think that's probably the biggest. They have more tournaments on Rayburn than anywhere in the country. And you won't really get that big of a crowd because, in my opinion, I think you get so many guys used to going to fishing tournaments that, I'll be honest with you, they almost look at it as this another one. But those, you know, down there in Orange, they don't get many big tournaments. I mean, in fact, I've never actually fished a tournament down in Orange. I think I fished in every single lake in Texas.
Well, that's the only kind of in Texas, I guess. Maybe that's part of it. I'm not sure. Todd Castle dying with us, talking a little bit here. You talked about what the way the weather has been there and what you're seeing right now, 64-degree water at Rayburn. I fished an event this past Saturday at Gunnersville Lake, and we had about 6 or 7 elites that fished in it. It was right before the cutoff for their deal. It was a big charity event that had 150 boats in it. Or, I'm sorry, 220 boats in that deal, I should say. It was great to see Aaron Martins. He fished it as well as a bunch of the elites. And I handled the weigh-in as well. And the two things that struck me there was we weighed in probably 35 five-pounders in this one-day event. But it was also everything was spawned out. And that was like 67-degree water for the most part. But it was amazing that all of those Gunnersville fish, for the most part, I'm sure there's still some fish on bed, but were spawned out. Do you think it's more about the calendar, or is it more about the water temperature?
Man, I'm a big guy that believes, you know, and I sight fish probably more than anybody. And I always go based on water temp. I mean, water temp, I don't care what it is unless it hits 59 or 60, they're not going to spawn. But what's interesting, though, is they were really, really late this year on Rayburn, like 3 weeks late. And I've only seen that one other time. And they were late on Texoma. They were late on most of the lakes I saw. I've got one local lake back home that they're so far done, it's crazy. And then I've never seen this many perch on the beds. Mm. And that usually doesn't happen for another month. So it's kind of strange. I mean, I think it's lake by lake. I hear reports about, I was down at Amstead last week, and water at Amstead was 65, and you couldn't hardly find a fish on a bed. There was no beds around it. It's almost like they hadn't even started down there. And that's kind of close to South Texas. It's just really, really strange right now.
Yeah, no, that is a little bit weird for sure. Skeeter Pro Todd Castletine with us here. Let's talk a little sight fishing, do a little technique of the week with you on the sight fishing. We're seeing the guys that are sight fishing at Fork using a lot of white. A lot of people like to go with a Senko type of deal, something that's very, very subtle. But we're also seeing Brandon Cobb, you know, he's throwing, a creature bait that's got a lot of appendages and a lot of movement as well. What's your take on it? What do you like to throw in there? And how long will you leave it in there? Because we're seeing a lot of guys that are just literally making a cast every 5 seconds. Just flip it in, flip it out, flip it in, pull it out.
Well, so the reason that's going on, the reason they're throwing in there and throwing out, first of all, yeah, I don't ever throw white. I used to all the time. I throw natural colors. Mm-hmm. I throw a rage bug 100% of the time across the entire country. It does not matter where I go. I'm not too worried about that. What I'll say is what's going on with why they're flipping in there a bunch is the front. So a lot of times you can just throw in on sight fish and mess with them and they'll eat. Anytime you have colder conditions, colder water temps, or fronts move through, they will not just go down there and eat your bait. You have to literally make them eat it. And a lot of times what they're doing is they're trying to antagonize that fish. And a lot of them are trying to like hop it in right in front of their mouth and just get a reaction strike. So that comes along with the cold. That's why I have all those things show me that it's still early is when, if they're doing that. And that's, That's 100% what that is.
I you know, it's interesting. You say I'm a big Rage Craw guy. I love the Rage Craw. I throw that no matter where. But, you know, the Rage Bug a little bit more subtler. Is that the thing that you like about it?
Yeah. So with me, sight fishing is rarely about the bait in the sense of what it is. What I'm more focused on is I want a thinner bait. I don't want a lot of appendages. I want it really compact. And the Rage Bug doesn't have as big a claws.
Right.
And the reason is I think I can get bit doing, you know, get bit with almost any bait. I'm more worried about the hook set and catching them. And the reason that is because unlike most fish, when they eat your bait, sight fish aren't really ever trying to eat your bait. They're just trying to bite it and get it out of there. So you get a lot of, you hook them in weird places in the mouth. You don't always hook them up top. They're, like I said, they're not trying to inhale it. They're just trying to barely get it in their mouth. So, and a lot of times you have to be really, really quick and you don't get really good hook sets. So mine's more about the bait and having a hook and everything that penetrates the bait and the fish. So it's more or less about not losing one, especially in fork. Like you don't want to sit there and mess with a 10 pounder for, you know, 45 minutes and then lose it. So I'm more worried about getting stuff where I don't lose them as opposed to getting them to bite it.
In our last minute too, just talk about how they react to that first pitch, because sometimes they'll just take off and are gone. And then other times they just kind of circle off the bed and come right back to it. Does that give you a tip right off the bat as to how you're going to attack that fish?
Yeah, usually if they go down there to it, I mean, that's a caught fish. What I'll say though, is once again, if you're not seeing that a bunch today, it's because of the cold.
Yeah.
It's because of the cold water tips. The warmer the water gets, the more they're apt to bite it on first flip. It's just one of those things. And you can kind of look around, and if people are blind casting them, they're going to have a very, very hard time blind casting fish and getting them to bite on first cast if the water temp's cold like this. So it's something to pay attention for and look for in this event as it unfolds.
Todd Castledine has been our guest. Todd, I appreciate you so much. Good luck this season, the rest of the way, and we'll look forward to seeing you down the road.
All right, I appreciate you having me.
All right, man, thank you. Todd Castledine. All right, we're going to see that guy in the elites. It's going to happen at some point in time. All right, let's get a break. We'll come back and wrap it up. This is Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
Final segment of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, and as we tie this one off to the dock, let's take a look at some news and notes from around the pond. Congrats to Japanese angler Daisuke Aoki, easy for me to say, for topping a stout field at the BassPro.com Bassmaster Southern Open on Douglas Lake with a three-day total of 43 pounds, 13 ounces. He placed fourth on day one with 15-13 and then held that position a day later with a second-round limit of 13-5. On Championship Saturday, Aoki added 14-11 and edged Bassmaster Elite Drew Benton by an ounce. Now, it was a heartbreaker for Benton, whose total was actually 3 ounces more than Aoki, but he incurred a 4-ounce dead fish penalty. Get your official Bassmaster merchandise at Bassmaster.shop. Hats, shirts, hoodies, and more, all from your favorite outdoor brands in great Bassmaster styles. Look for great deals every week at Bassmaster.shop. You can sign up for Rapala Bassmaster Fantasy Fishing as well, with prizes for 1st through 20th place in each Elite event and the Bassmaster Classic. Plus, one grand prize winner will receive a $15,000 Bass Pro Shop shopping spree, $5,000 cash, and a variety prize pack from Rapala, a total value of more than $20,000. In fact, a grand total of more than $90,000 in prizes are available this year. So visit BassmasterFantasy.com to register and pick your team for the next event. Now there's a new way to play fantasy fishing as well. Introducing the Mercury Bassmaster Drain the Lake Challenge. Drain the Lake requires players to use an entirely different strategy. Drain the Lake is considered an elimination pool game. So in other words, players can only pick an Elite Series angler one time during the course of the season. Unlike traditional fantasy fishing, there are no buckets. Tournament players select any 8 anglers And after you choose an angler for a specific event, you can no longer select that angler for the remainder of the season. The Drain the Lake winning player, along with the rest of the top five players in each elite tournament and the classic, will receive a prize package from Mercury, which includes one Mercury backpack, one Mercury wall clock, one Mercury 12 can cooler bag, a Mercury first aid kit, a Mercury hat, and a Mercury hoodie. Plus, a $500 Bass Pro Shops gift card will be rewarded to any individual prize winner who is a Bass member. The grand prize winner for the entire season will win a fishing trip with Mark Zona in Michigan, including airfare and hotel. Remember, if you missed any of this week's show, it's just a click away at bassmaster.com/radio.